This episode is sponsored by Jacobson Real Estate Company. Are you ready to find your dream home? Or maybe you're thinking about selling and want the best deal possible? Well, look no further. At Jacobson Real Estate Company, we make buying or selling your home smooth, stress-free, and exciting. With 50-plus years of experience and a deep knowledge of the Winona, Minnesota area market, we specialize in turning your real estate goals into reality. Whether it's finding that perfect neighborhood, negotiating top dollar for your property, or answering all of your questions along the way, we're here for you. Plus, with our personalized approach, you're not just a client, you're family. So why wait? Let Jacobson Real Estate Company open the door to your future. Call us today at 507-313-2716 or visit our website at jacobsonrealestatecompany.com. Because your next chapter starts here. Buy, sell, invest. Jacobson Real Estate Company. Welcome, everyone, to this week's edition of Brews and Crews. I am your host, Chris Jacobson. And today I have a guest by the name of Mike, but he's better known as MTG Jedi, who's a content creator known for making videos on the game Raid, Shadow Legends, who also has a competitive background in Magic the Gathering, if you remember that from back in the day, and it's currently still happening, and also in other board games. But he shares tips, tricks, and daily news on his YouTube channel, which has a large subscriber base of about 26,000 subscribers. The creator's longtime love for games has led him to create his own board game as well, which we are going to talk about. Mike, MTG Jedi, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks so much for having me here. I appreciate it. I'm just excited to be here and talk about all this stuff with you.
Now, I have some knowledge here that you used to be a math teacher. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, I taught high school math for 16 years.
You know, okay, so we have something in common where I used to be a PE teacher for 10 years, just recently resigned from that position, but I did teach some math as well. So both of us have a background in teaching, which is kind of crazy. And I understand that you just resigned to start working on your board game full time. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've been full time with YouTube and streaming and working on the board game for a little over a year now.
Now, how long have you been doing everything YouTube based? Because we're going to go over a bunch of things that you actually do. But with your YouTube channel, how long have you been actually creating content online?
So I started making content actually for Pokemon Go. I love Pokemon. I loved Pokemon Go. And I tried to launch my channel like that after that game was out for a little while. So I've been making content for Raid for about 5 years with basically daily videos. And I started streaming a little while into that journey. And streaming is not something I ever thought I was going to do. I just thought I would do the video side. And then one day I was talking to my brother, who's my tech advisor. And I said, you know, like, how hard would it be to set up? And he said, you just literally press one button. And I was like, if that's all it is, then okay, let's do it. You know,
what was it for you? Was it weird to just start pushing record and start talking about something? I know obviously you're probably passionate about it, but was it a weird concept to just be like, oh, it's a click of a button and here we go?
I don't think so. It was pretty natural to me. Like, so there's a couple of like building blocks that helped me get there. I think teaching is certainly one of them. You know, you're up in front of the kids every day presenting some topic that you're in charge of and you planned and all of this stuff that you're knowledgeable about, you're talking about. So that kind of formatting, that was just sort of normal for me. And I had to get used to recording videos during COVID. So I recorded math videos to start. And then that was a pretty easy transition. I had always wanted to start a YouTube channel anyway. And then the other part of it is the magic side of things. I used to write strategy and finance articles for Magic the Gathering. I worked for a site called quietspeculation.com. And we talked about like, hey, there's this card and we think it's about to dramatically increase in price. And, you know, we also talked about our fun tournament experiences and the cool decks we were playing and stuff. But that was a written format. I was writing articles, but it was still the same kind of process of preparing content.
Sure. Now, did you, going off of the teaching aspect, did as you started getting more and more content, did you like create a lesson plan, quote unquote, when you started creating these videos?
No, actually, I'm more of a fly by the seat of my pants kind of a guy. Like I have an outline in my mind of the topic, and then I know what I want to say. I know where I want to go with it. And I find a lot of creativity in, talking and recording on the fly. It just is a skill that comes naturally to me. Even when I was teaching, if I had an option, like my lesson plan would look like a folded piece of paper with like, just like some notes jotted down on it, you know, and then I can fill in everything else from there.
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing I always loved growing up was actually public speaking. So I find my love of just talking to people such as yourself, who I've never met until literally 5 minutes ago.
Right.
I find it easy just to talk to people and learn about them. And honestly, it's just like having a conversation with anybody any time of the day. But yeah, just flying by the seat of your pants. That's kind of a gift to have though sometimes, because there's a lot of people that would just freeze up and you hit the record button. You're like, you know, you just sit there and not know what to say. But it sounds like since you love what you're doing, it's probably very, very simple for you to just continue to talk and talk and talk about what you're doing.
Yeah, for sure. And
so like, that leads me to, sorry.
Oh no, you're good. I was going to say like, you definitely, if you're wanting to get into this kind of thing, you want to at least have some kind of outline to go by. And a lot of creators, they don't utilize the pause button. And you like get yourself jumbled up, all you got to do is hit pause or learn some basic editing skills so that you can take out those little fumbles, and it really makes your content a lot more seamless.
Awesome. Yeah. And that, I totally agree with that. I'm still learning all that kind of stuff. I try not to just say, so I don't have to do that, but I'm working on it. Now I want to go off of the Magic the Gathering, because that was something, and I'm 38 years old, and I remember when I would see it in the store. I can't say that I played it. I can't say I collected any of the cards, but you said that you were writing finance pieces about possibly like when a card might increase in value or decrease. And I can understand that from a sports card perspective, because I still kind of do at the moment collect sports cards. So when it came to Magic the Gathering, you were playing it and then you also collected the cards. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so give me a rundown of a tournament, because I have never been in a tournament for Magic the Gathering. How does that work?
Okay, so there's a couple different things that you want to know about tournaments, okay? Number one, probably within 10 minutes of you, unless you live in a very, very small town, there are Magic the Gathering tournaments that happen every week. Within 10 minutes of you, yourself, sure. And everybody listening, there is a tournament if you want to go play. Most of those are very casual, and you could just show up and they will help you. Some of them, they give you the cards, and some of them, you bring your own deck to play. But there's definitely tournaments happening around you. And so those tournaments happen at what we call local game stores. So wherever you would buy your board games or card games, most likely they're holding tournaments. As for what I think you're alluding to is playing competitively, and that would be more like regional tournaments. So I used to travel. I live in Pittsburgh, PA, and I used to travel all over the East Coast, out to Baltimore, Indianapolis, Chicago, Cincinnati, down in Virginia, some places, North Carolina, all over the East Coast for these bigger professional level events. And those could be anywhere from 100 to 1,000 participants. And there's a variety of different rule sets that you can go off of. But those big tournaments, the way that they work is you submit a deck list for the deck that you're going to play, or you write down the cards that they give you, and then you make a deck out of them. And then what they do is every round they pair you up against another competitor, and eventually, you know, you play through all of the rounds until they do what's like a final cut. And usually it's a 1-day tournament, but it could be 8 or 10 hours long. And then at the end of that, then they cut to the top 8 players. And then the top 8 players play 3 more rounds to determine who is the final winner of the tournament.
Gotcha. So you actually answered a question I was going to ask, was do you bring your own set or do they give you a set? And you said there's 2 different variations.
Yes.
So which one do you like doing better, when you bring your own deck or when they give you a deck and you have to?
I would say I love both of them, but I like the ones where they give you the cards more. There's a lot more strategy in building your deck from those cards instead of just being able to go purchase exactly what you want. And then you have a game plan. Everything's going to work out. You know, it's going to work out.
Sure.
But you have your plan, and then, you know, you're fighting against somebody else with their plan. Whenever they give you the cards, then number one, you're getting more cards. And that's always great. So you could open big hits, you know, valuable cards. You get to utilize your strategic part of your brain where you're like, I think this card and this card will work together. And you have to make all these choices and decisions in a pretty timely manner.
Now, to me, what that sounds like, and I play a lot a slow pitch softball, and then I play in tournaments. It's like they bring the balls and the equipment, and everyone has to play with the same stuff. Sometimes that's what it sounds like, because if you get to bring your own equipment, someone might have a $100 bat, someone might have a $300 bat, and they're going to perform differently. So that is kind of a cool, unique strategy. Is like they're all going to give you the cards, and then you have to make the best of what you have, which I like that too. I could understand how that would be like, well, there was the deck literally the cards I was dealt.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to sound very ignorant here because I don't play it.
And it's not too late. You can go get into it. I'm sure your buddy, honestly, who's helping with the sound, I'm sure he knows a little bit about it too. He could help you out.
Well, actually, when you said there's probably a local one going on in your hometown, I'm pretty sure 3 blocks from where we're recording right now, I'm pretty sure they played. It's a place called Jimmy Jams. I'm pretty sure they have Magic the Gathering local things happening there. And Curtis is shaking his head at me right now saying, yes, they do. So I'm right then on that. So when you're playing the game, how does it work? I mean, is it like a card game where there's points on each thing and then they all mean something? I mean, you can give me a very brief synopsis because
the basics of Magic the Gathering is you have these cards that are resources called lands. You can play 1 land per turn, and those lands, they let you play other cards. I do literally have cards right in front of me right now. So like, it just looks like generic, like artwork of a landscape portrait almost. And then there are 5 different basic ones. And each of those 5, they represent different things. Like the red mountains and the red cards represent like chaos and fire and burning. And so then there's like white, green, blue, and black alongside the red. And so each of them have their own kind of thing that they do. So if you have a certain play style, you might gravitate towards one of those colors or a combination of them. And then what you're doing with those lands is you're like summoning monsters to fight people, or you're playing like a spell to boost your monster's damage, you know, like if any kind of thing that you can, you know, compare it to, like if you've ever played or seen stuff about Pokemon. Like that's the same type of thing. And even the Pokemon game is very similar to Magic. But yeah, so every turn you'll play a land, you'll maybe play a card from your hand, you'll fight the monsters or heroes against each other. And your goal is to get your opponent's life points from 20 to 0.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Well, that's a pretty good description because no one's ever told me how it all works. And so the idea is everyone starts with 20 points.
Yeah.
And you're just trying to get them to 0.
Yeah.
that makes sense. I mean, I play blackjack, so like, yeah,
exactly.
Trying to get as close to 21 playing as a dealer. I mean, that, I get the idea.
Yeah.
So was that your first love where these like games came for you? Is this kind of your first love was Magic the Gathering or is there something
else? Yeah, absolutely.
How old were you?
Well, I got my first Magic cards when I was in high school. This is a funny story, actually. I don't know if Curtis ever knows this one. This will be like a little insider info. So when I was in high school, my mom took my brothers and I to Barnes & Noble to learn how to play Magic. And I was thrilled. You know, I didn't know what that meant, but I was like, okay, that sounds really fun. So we went and we learned and we got these starter decks. Well, apparently my mom thought that we were learning magic tricks, like card tricks, pulling a rabbit out of a hat. And then when she saw the cards, she's like, those are evil. We're going to throw them in the garbage. So I had to throw away my first Magic the Gathering cards. I still remember it. I was so upset. But then after that, when I went to college, one of my best friends in the world, I met there and he introduced me to Magic again. And that's when I really started playing. So like 2001, 2002.
Okay. So then you played competitively, correct?
Yeah. I dove into the competitive scene like almost right away. Like within the first month or two, and this is not common. A lot of people, you know, they ease their way in, but I'm just a very competitive person. And I was like, there are tournaments, let's do it. Like, help me make a deck, let's go. And it came very naturally to me. I liked the idea of strategy type things, but I was never really able to experience that outside of maybe some like original PlayStation role-playing games. So whenever we first started playing Magic, it was like I just like sucked in right away.
My wife would argue that I'm the same exact way. I'll find something that I really love and I'll dive head first into it all in, and then it could fizzle out for me sometimes. Like sports cards, like I was into that when I was a kid. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, my buddies got me back into it about 2 years ago. And I was like all in. I'm buying cases. I'm doing this, that, and the other thing. And then all of a sudden, I just bought a new house. And I was kind of like, maybe there's more important things. And we had a baby and stuff like that.
I know.
So I was like, yeah. So that's now for a tournament. What's the goal? Are you winning prize money or what are you going for?
So the tournaments, they do a lot of different things. Sometimes you're just winning more packs of cards. Some tournaments like give you a lot, like a full box, a sealed box of cards. But a lot of tournaments give you actual money. There would be like a cash payout for the winners. And then these bigger tournaments that I would go to, like Grand Prix is a Grand Prix or some type of event that would qualify you for the pro tour. There's a professional tour for Magic the Gathering. And I'm not sure if they still pay out enough, but they used to pay out enough that the pros made their living by playing the game.
Wow. Like that's gotta be pretty good money then.
Yes. Yes.
So what would it cost to get into a tournament? Was there, I assume there's a fee.
Right. Yeah, there's a fee. I want to say for most of them, it was $25 to $50, depending on what you were doing. The local ones are much cheaper, depending on what you want to do. If they're giving you the cards, it's going to be more expensive because you get cards, and then there are prizes on top of that.
Sure. Is there a national all-in type tournament, and if so, where is it located at?
So I don't know if they're still doing nationals, but they did have a tournament literally called nationals for each country because Magic the Gathering is played globally. Like there's a really big following in Europe, in Japan, all over the world. And so they would have national tournaments for each country, and then those winners would go to a world championship. But like they had to change a lot about what they were doing with COVID COVID had a really big negative impact on Magic because it's getting people together in a big group in one room. So a lot of things changed after that.
So your love for games, board games, all came from Magic. And now I want to talk about the other one that you're kind of big on, and I believe it's on Twitch. Is that correct? Was his Raid Shadow Legends? Is that correct?
Yeah. So Raid is a mobile game, and it's basically like adult Pokemon. That's how I like to describe it to people. You're collecting heroes instead of little cute monsters, and then you're building them with like gear and abilities so that they can fight bosses and you can fight other players as well. And so it's a mobile game, but it does have like, if you play on your computer, there's like a PC version as well. And you can just go back and forth. So a lot of what I do is play on my phone, but then yeah, I stream it and I make the videos and stuff on YouTube and Twitch.
So now help me understand Twitch, because Curtis has kind of given me a little bit of insight about what Twitch is. But is that where you're just literally gaming and people like kind of tune in and watch what you're doing?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so you're like, going to have to come hang out.
I guess so, because I don't do any of these kind of games. Although I grew up with, you know, obviously the Super Nintendo and the Nintendo 64, PlayStation, all that. Literally, I buy a lot of game consoles and I never really play them. But I need to get on and check out what Twitch is, because it sounds to me, and probably to a lot of people, like, who would go and watch people play video games? But then there's the other side of the coin where people go, well, who the heck would sit down and watch people play sports? You know, like,
right.
it's all just a different, you know, it's just a different situation. So with Twitch, is that where you got your, is that where Raid is on that you're doing?
I do play Raid on Twitch. Yes. Any video game that you play, you can play it on there. So it's specific to that. Like if you want to go play Call of Duty or watch someone play Call of Duty, there's probably like 50,000 people watching Call of Duty right now. Or whatever.
So then how do you get them to watch? Oh, sorry. How do you get them to watch yours?
That is the hard part. Yeah. For me,
it's just like this probably.
For me, just like doing the YouTube and growing the YouTube channel. And then you just mentioning in your video that you also stream on Twitch, you have the links and stuff. It's like just advertising for yourself, basically. But one of the great things about the Raid community is that the content creators all send their viewers to other Raid content creators when they're done streaming. I just thought this was commonplace for people to do that. It's not. Some people just hit stop streaming when you can easily send your viewers to somebody else. And so the it's not a very nice name, but like one of the biggest Raid content creators, his name is Hell Hades, and he sent his viewers to my stream early on, and I think that's one of the reasons why I was able to catch on. He was, you know, as big as me or bigger at the time. He probably had 100,000 subscribers on YouTube. He's got 1,000 people watching him live on Twitch. And then he's like, okay, I'm done for the night. He sends his viewers over to me. And then now I have 1,000 people watching me, at least for a couple minutes before they take off, you know? So Twitch does help content creators grow, because when you go on Twitch, you're probably going to look for a specific thing. Like you love cars or baseball cards, let's say. There are definitely people on Twitch right now talking about those topics. And you don't have to be streaming a game now on Twitch. You can just be like, you could boot up Twitch tonight and start talking about the cars that you love. Would you have anybody watching you? I don't know. But you just pretend that people are watching you, and then eventually they will be.
So on average, what do you normally, when you start twitching, what do you normally have for viewership? I don't know if twitching's the right name.
You're fine streaming. Yeah, streaming.
See, Curtis laughing at me in the background.
Yeah, it's fine. We're definitely going to talk about it tomorrow. It's all good. Right now, I stream simultaneously on YouTube and Twitch, and I usually have at least 100 people on each side. So I'm usually streaming to a couple hundred people right now.
So when you're playing, this is where I'm going with this question.
Okay.
When you know people are watching you, do you get a little nervous at all on how you're playing or not?
Really? That's a good question. I don't know. I don't think so. I just do my thing and, you know, like nobody's perfect, but I'm sure people get nervous doing it. You just kind of get used to it. Like if I had 100 people in the room with me right now watching me play, I would be super nervous. But like, I can't see any of them. They're just like chatting in the chat box. So it's not as much pressure, you know, I don't think. Another thing.
So
that
when
I,
they're chatting, oops, sorry.
Well, I was just going to say another thing that I do that helps like minimize that is I do a lot of account help. Like I'm helping other players, giving them ideas or like actually getting on their account and helping them with the game. So I'm not always on my account playing, like being the spotlight, I guess.
Gotcha. Now, when you're playing, you said you're helping people. So do you ever give the, I mean, I think from what I read that you do tips and tricks and stuff like that on your YouTube channel. Are you also teaching people as you're playing?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I feel like you're just because you're a teacher and as am I would be teaching at the same time I'm playing and it would just kind of come natural. Like, here's why I'm doing what I am doing, whatever game you're playing.
Yeah.
Okay. So that just makes a whole lot of sense. Now, when there's a chat log, you were saying, do you respond to them as you're playing the game? Like, as you're playing, are you reading the chat log too?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's how do you do all that at the same time?
Yeah. And I have two different chats because I have a YouTube chat and a Twitch chat separately. So I'm trying to read both chats, play the game, help people, do all the things all at the same time. It's just like kind of a skill you develop. You're never going to be able to see every comment, you know, once you get to like 100 people, like you're never going to be able to see every comment. But you can still answer most of them. And so, I love interacting with the chat. That's how I,
so are you able
I
to
met
make
your guy over here?
Curtis. Yeah. He's always talking smack at football games on Twitter. So I know what he says to people. It's so funny too. And then sometimes they respond to him and he gets into an argument about the Minnesota Vikings. Cause we're Vikings fans over here.
Oh,
so it's always fun.
Sorry. Go Steelers.
Man, we're having a rough season, but now when it comes to Twitch, are you able to make money off of that then?
Yeah. So Twitch is oftentimes almost half of my income.
Oh, okay. So how does one make money off of that then? Like, is it sponsorships or something?
So let me just break down the whole monetization model for you so that you can get the
perfect. That would be great.
Yeah. So what you should be aiming for right now, and hopefully I can help with that because I'm going to share
myself.
What you should be shooting for, because I'm a teacher. So what you should be shooting for is 500 to 1,000 or more subscribers on YouTube right now. I don't know if you have that already, but
I'm at 396, I believe.
So close. We're going to get you there. Okay. All right. If you're following me already, we got to help my dude out here. Okay. So you're going to go subscribe.
Come on, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. I have perfect faith that we're going to get you to 500. You have the watch hours, and then you'll start making money on every one of your videos. It'll just be a little bit, but it'll be based on, it's not exactly based on views, but it is. It's based on the ads that people watch during the time. And since you have a long content form with the podcast, you have much more opportunities for people to get those ads. So that's thing one. We're making money from the YouTube videos, really based on advertising, but it's based on views. And on the Twitch side of things, all of that is free for people. They just watch you, you make money. On Twitch, when you subscribe to someone, that means you are paying them. So people pay, the lowest is $6 per month to help the person that they watch get an income.
Okay.
And then a common practice on Twitch is to donate subscriptions to other viewers. And so all of that ends up with you being paid from those subscribers. Now, you had also mentioned sponsorships, and that's a big part of my income as well. Right now, I'm sponsored by my buddy's Strike Gum Company, which is like caffeinated gum. It's like super awesome. I'm very excited about that. It's kind of like I'm helping him out, he's helping me out. But things like that come up all the time. And then lots of different games like to advertise within other game creators. So I get game sponsorships all the time as well.
Awesome. So I was looking at the bottom of your website. I got it up on my phone here, and I assume it's called, is it the Blue Stacks? Is that the gum?
Yeah, no, not the sponsorship is so new that it's not on there. Actually, all of the sponsors on the bottom of my website are all expired and they need to be removed. But
I saw one had an energy drink. It looked like a pre-workout drink.
So. I used to be sponsored by Rogue Energy. They're still on there. Yeah. I've had a number of sponsorships over the years, for sure.
So when it comes to the YouTube creation, you tips, tricks, and all that kind of stuff, daily news on your YouTube, do you do it just strictly on, you know, Raid, or is it on any other platforms of games?
So the vast majority, something like 98% of the videos are going to be on Raid in one way or another. Sometimes I will do a full sponsored video on another game or, you know, some type of product, but usually a game. And then once in a while, other interests that I have, I'll just make a video on. But yeah, almost every day is going to be a video on Raid.
So you're doing one every single day. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Or pretty close to?
Yeah.
That, I had a buddy told me, he's like, you got to be posting, even if it's just something stupid, like 3 times a day on everything. And now obviously YouTube, you're making long form content when it comes to tips and tricks. But I had a buddy who was on my podcast. He has Kick-Ass Beef Jerky. You probably don't know what that is over in Pennsylvania, but around our area, it's kind of a big thing. And he has like 10 million followers on TikTok and all the platforms. Wow. He said, you need to post like 3 times a day, just something. Doesn't matter what. And so I've been trying to take his advice, and I will obviously take your advice too, because people that are bigger than me, I want to learn from what they're doing, because that's the only way I can grow too, is if I take people's advice and just keep it going and keep it going. So appreciate that little bit of knowledge on the insight. Now, I want to get to the game that you are creating, because you're creating, it's a board game though, right?
It's a board physical.
Yeah. And it's called Alaria Quest. Is that right?
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Okay. Now, you have a love for games, obviously. Yeah. How did you, first of all, what is it? And then how did you decide, I want to create a board game and we're going to go through with this?
Okay. So you mentioned blackjack and poker and stuff that you enjoyed. In my game, the poker deck is part of the game. So basically, So the poker deck is a custom fantasy poker deck. So if you see these like characters behind me here, those are characters from the game. They're not characters that are on the poker cards, but there are other similar characters on the poker cards. So you're getting like a Lord of the Rings style poker deck that you can just use to play poker or blackjack or whatever crazy eights that you want to in your life. That comes with the game. But also, it's a part of the game. That's how you beat the bosses in the game, is using the poker deck. That's how you overcome the traps and you go through there's like some story cards and stuff. So for the game, there's basically the two decks of cards. One is the poker deck. The other one is called a quest deck. And the quest deck has your like fantasy moments. It has the bosses. It has all of those things that I just mentioned. And so you kind of use those two decks to work with each other to play through the game. It's very easy. You take your turn by like flipping a card from the quest deck, and then you do what it says. If it's a boss, you fight it. If it's a trap, then you're using the poker deck and the cards on the poker deck to beat the bosses and overcome the traps. So like your knowledge of blackjack and poker is perfect because the poker cards all have values, right? And you know this, like what's the value of the king in blackjack?
The 10.
10. And that's the same way in my game as well. So your ace, king, queen are 10s. I mean, excuse me, your jack, queen, king are 10s. Your ace is 1 or 11. Your number cards are those numbers. And you're using those values throughout the game. Then the only other thing there is to it, you have health and you can get loot tokens. And it plays in about 20 to 30 minutes. You can play it with kids or adults or both. And it's just like a really family-friendly, easy, fun game to play. So that's like the kind of basics about the game.
So the image that you have in your background, is that characters within your game?
Correct, yes.
Okay.
This is the Time Wizard, the Cowboy Time Wizard, and that's the final boss of the game, the Goblin King himself.
Okay, so how did you come up with the name Alaria? What does Alaria stand for?
So Alaria it doesn't really stand for anything. But what I have come to find out through happenstances is that Alaria is just a name that some people have in their head for fantasy type things. Gotcha. And it was just a name that I had created for the world that the game takes place in.
Okay, so it's the world that the game takes place in.
Correct, yeah.
Okay. So now how did you decide this was the game that you wanted to create? Because I never hear anybody say, I'm going to go create a board game. That's like something that's just so out of the ordinary for me. How'd you decide I want to create a board game?
So this is such a fun story. I love telling this one.
Oh, good.
over the years, I have made a couple of games myself and I've tested them out with my family and things. And so like I've always had like a love for creating, and whether that's creating like videos or stories or now board games, it's the creation part that I love. And so I've done that a fair bit over the years. As when it comes to the board game itself, then the summer of 2024, I had just quit my teaching job and I was at a pool party with my family. I was talking to my brother and my sister-in-law. They don't go together. My sister-in-law for my other brother. And then anyway, it doesn't matter. I was talking to some family about possibly using this now free time that I had to work on one of my board games. And they were like overly abundant, so supportive right away. And like that kind of like took me back. They were like, yeah, you should definitely do that. It'll be awesome. And then here's the important part. You should do the easiest one first. And that would not have been like, this would not have been my first choice. I have other games that I love that I've made, but this was the easiest one. And just to give you context on that, I've worked on it every single day for 18 months. And this was the easiest
one. Holy smokes.
Right. So I can't really fathom yet how much effort it's going to be for the other ones coming up. But most of the games that I want to make are not crazy complex games. I want more simple games that are just new, fun, have some strategy and luck to them that are accessible to everyone. So
now would you consider this your game? You said you want to be simple, fun with a little bit of strategy.
Yes.
Would Magic the Gathering be like one that's very like hard, kind of hardcore, a lot of strategy involved? I don't know the difference. So,
so
how would you compare it? I guess of
how hard they are, I would say my game is much, much easier. It is much easier. Okay. Now, I would say that learning Magic is also very easy, but unless it's like you and your friend who have also never played before and you're learning together and just playing against each other, it's going to get very difficult very quickly. because you're going to get into people building their own decks and like you're getting your mind blown with like things you didn't know were possible. And like that kind of stuff doesn't really happen in my board game. It's like when you learn the game, your expectations will be like, oh, that's really cool. I didn't know we could do that. Rather than, oh, that's really cool. I guess I lose really badly now. That's the comparison to Magic. But I think okay. that it's a great time to start playing Magic for anybody who's interested. And you just have to play against the same skill level people for a little while before you try to play against the people who've been playing for a while.
Gotcha. Now, what you said, it's family friendly. So what would you say the base age would have to be to kind of understand your game?
So I have to put printing on the box that says 14 plus. So if you're going to get the game, that's what it's going to say. But I've played the game with as young as second graders.
You're talking like 7 or 8 years old.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
You're going to play a slightly different version of the game with second graders than you are with older kids. But once you have kids that can easily read the cards, understand the rules, like my estimate is like probably 10 to 12 would be very easy to play with.
Gotcha. And then depends all the way up to adults would enjoy this too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome.
It's a game that the adults can play with themselves, or it's a game that you can incorporate your kids. It just has a lot of flexibility for people who haven't played a lot of games. The rules allow for different people to have an easier or harder time and all play the same game.
Gotcha. So how'd you come up with the whole wizard aspect of the game? Is it based off of just your background growing up? Is that how you came up with it? Or do you just have a love for wizards and all that?
So the Goblin King was actually the start of the game. I like this idea of like a Dungeons and Dragons, the dungeon part, where you're going into like this mountain cave fortress and you're like fighting the goblins and like they have all these traps for you that you're going through. And then eventually you make your way to the heart of the mountain and you get to fight the Goblin King. And that kind of like Lord of the Rings adventure was the feel and the setting that I was going for, but in more of a like bright fantasy style art. The Time Wizard actually just started out as a boss. And then the more that I got into developing the game, the more I kind of like figured out who that character was and how important he was. Now the Time Wizard is like a whole expansion to the game. There's actually the Time Wizard and three others. There's four expansions that are coming out with the game when we launch on Kickstarter. By the time you're seeing this or hearing this, we'll be live on Kickstarter. So,
yeah, and we're going to get to that in just a moment about the Kickstart ad campaign as well. Sure. I want to go off of I just look at your artwork. Who did your artwork for you? Did you do it or somebody else?
No, I am not skilled in the art department. I came up with all of the concepts. I have all the ideas, and then I need somebody else to do the ideas. So I hired an art company, and they did almost all of the art for the game.
Oh, just going off of your love for this and your creative mind, I would have thought that you would have been an art teacher, to be honest with you. If I didn't know your background already of the math aspect, I'd be like, you're probably an art teacher of some sort because you have a creative mind, it sounds like, just based on everything. I mean, now obviously you told us that you didn't do the artwork, and that's perfectly fine because most people can't just do everything themselves, but that's actually kind of cool that you hired that out. And then I assume you have to approve every aspect of the artwork. Is that right?
Yeah. And I really love that. I really loved that whole process of, here's my idea. Maybe I have visuals to go off of the idea. Maybe I don't. Sometimes it's just words, because some of my ideas, there's not anything comparable, you know? So then I send that over to the art company. Sometimes we go back and forth a dozen times with adjustments. Like, no, it doesn't really look good like that. Like the Time Wizard's hat, for example. I think we changed the hat 10 times. The rest of him was good almost from the get-go, but the hat, we just had to get that detail right. And I really enjoy that creative process, seeing my idea come to life.
Well, that's kind of really cool. And you sound like you're pretty detail oriented, because you just said we went back and forth like 10 times on just the hat portion. So you must be pretty detail oriented when it comes to your concept that you're trying to bring to life.
Yeah, for sure. You have to be. I think one of the things that people will love about this, the initial feedback that I've gotten from a lot of people, is that the art is really cool. And I think that is because I have put so much effort into those details. It's not like you would look at the original art for the Time Wizard and be like, oh, that's bad, I don't like it. It was good, but it's just not great, you know? And once you get all of the details that you have, they all come together and just make it look so much better, you know?
Yeah. And so now you said you have already played it, so you must have some prototypes already made up. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, for sure. When I'm designing games, I very quickly go to prototypes. I have some like initial like sketches and stuff, but I want to get some sort of like realistic physical representation like very quickly. So like the two of the other games I'm working on right now, I already have prototypes for them.
So you're working on multiple games.
Yeah. If I could be honest with you, okay. I have four games in the pipeline right now.
Holy cow.
Yeah. So like,
but this is your, this is like your baby right now.
Yes. Yeah. We gotta make sure that this game gets out. We can make some money from that. So then we can fund the process of making the other games.
So who makes your prototypes then, when you're like, hey, I need a prototype? Where do you go for that even?
Well, there's a lot of sites that make prototypes. The Game Crafter is like a very common one that board game people use. There's also a lot of companies that do proxies for Magic the Gathering cards. And what that means is like, you're basically making a fake card. That works out for me, because if you're making a game that's based on cards, they can print that for you. It's not that cheap, but it's also not that expensive. And then when it comes to the actual game, I have a manufacturer in China that's going to be producing the game. I know that's not ideal. I would love to do it in the US, but it just, if people want an affordable game, that's just how it has to happen most of the time. So.
Sure. Now let's go off of the Kickstarter campaign. I think it's set on your website. It starts on the 11th or 12th.
Correct. Yeah. And the 11th.
When this comes out. Yeah. We're talking the 17th when this comes out.
Yeah.
So it'll already be happening at the moment.
Right. Yeah. It'll already be live, and it runs through December 4th. So they'll have a little bit of time to find it and go, you know, decide what they would want to get and everything.
So forgive me for not knowing what a Kickstarter campaign is. Is that fund the process or
is it? So Kickstarter is a crowdfunding website.
Okay.
Yeah. So Kickstarter, then
if they donate, are they getting a game, or are they just funding you to help you get the game?
So you can do a lot of different things on Kickstarter. The way that I am doing it is, you get the game. You can buy the game. You can buy the expansions. There's a poster for the map of the world of Alaria. And you can donate a game to charity. Like, if you're not interested in the game at all, you can go donate a game to charity for kids who are not going to get Christmas presents. And so like, there's a lot of different options for you, but yeah, you're paying for whatever you want to get.
Sure. Okay. So that's a really awesome thing. You said you can donate for someone that maybe is not going to get a Christmas present and they would get this game as their Christmas present.
Yeah, exactly.
That's an awesome concept. I like that. It's just like gifting it or paying it forward, which is actually really neat. So the campaign goes until what day you said? December 14th. Is that correct?
December 4th is the last day.
December 4th. Okay. Yes. And then will they get the game before Christmas then?
I don't know the answer to that. I put on the Kickstarter that we would be shipping in April of 2026 as like the last possible thing. I think most likely we'll be shipping in earlier than that, in 2026, but a lot of that is outside of my control. So I don't know exactly what the timeline is going to be, but what I do know is the game is done. It is finished. And as soon as the Kickstarter is finished, it's going to go to the manufacturer to start making the games. They tell me that the timeline is pretty quick. So I'm hoping for a quick turnaround on the Kickstarter. But like I said, with this being my first Kickstarter and my first game, I just don't know for certain a lot of those details. So we might need to be a little bit patient in receiving the game. But whatever you pay for, you're definitely going to get.
Do you have to hit a certain goal of money to make the game happen? Or do you just, I got this much from Kickstarter and then I just put the rest of the money of my own personal together and then it starts getting manufactured?
So, great question. With Kickstarter and a lot of crowdfunding sites, the creator sets a goal. And if that goal is met, then it goes into production. For me, I've set my goal as low as I could imagine being successful with. So I'm hoping we're going to hit that funding goal on the first day, and then we're going to exceed that goal and get the game out to lots of people who will just have a ton of fun playing it.
Well, that's really cool. I mean, know someone that is creating their own game out of basically thin air. It's very impressive because you've got to have an imagination. It's got to have an imagination that's like, just, it's got to be out of this world because it's got to be something different than everyone else is already playing. And it can't be boring either. And so you just like having that imagination to me is pretty wild to just create something kind of out of thin air. And you're obviously passionate about it too. So as we're starting to wind down, I have a couple of questions before I want you to kind of plug all the content and where to go, possibly go to Kickstarter. But when creating this game, Alaria Quest, what was like a hard or a negative that you had? And then what was a positive or something that was like, yes, we finally did it. It finally worked. That was awesome. So is there a high and a low?
Yeah, for sure. So I would say that the marketing that I've done through Facebook has got to have been the hardest part by far. It's just a lot of complete nonsense and a lot of websites that look exactly the same, but they're not. And so like learning that, and I'm still a complete beginner, but learning that has been the hardest part by far. Trying to figure out all of the details on the Kickstarter was pretty difficult as well. But like kind of once I got the ball rolling on that, that became a little bit easier. And then as far as the fun part, I loved the like, let's play this game that I made up and then let's figure out what are the things that make it great? What are the things that are the not fun parts that we want to eliminate? And like, how can we turn it from an idea to an actual game? I absolutely loved that process. And then I think you had like,
is there any people in there? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, I was just going to ask you what your next question was.
Well, my next question is, who were some of the big supporters behind you when making this game? You kind of threw out a couple names earlier that said, this at a pool party that was like, oh, that's a good idea. But now that it's past the idea stage and it's literally almost in production stage, who are some people that really helped you out to like say, hey, that didn't work out so well, maybe you should change that, or that's great, or who would you play it with that was kind of really a big influence to help you out?
Yeah, I did a lot of play testing with my wife, who's not a big gamer. And so being able to get her perspective on the game was so important, because I think that this is the type of game you can play with people who've never played board games before. Like, your only board games are Monopoly and Sorry, and you played like some poker and blackjack. You can play this game. You can learn it in five minutes and enjoy it. You know, and getting my wife's perspective on that was like so key to me building that, the game, to be accessible for everyone. And then just like a lot of people that I've met through streaming, you know, your cameraman over here, like my dude, I mean, he's been super helpful through the whole process, and tons of other people just like him that I only met from making videos and doing these live streams. I've been able to meet so many cool people through that process that helped me out.
Well, that is pretty cool that you can meet people that you've never literally met in person just to help you out, because of literally everything that we have with technology wise, people around the world or within the country can help you out. And then we meet like this, which is amazing, I think. Yeah. So the last thing I want you to do is there anything that we've missed that you want to plug or make sure that we get into this episode? Because we are coming down to about 55 minutes in the episode. So I want to make sure I didn't skip over anything that's really important to you.
No, I don't think so. First of all, I just want to give some gratitude, thanking you for having me here. I love doing stuff like this. It's so fun talking to other people about either stuff that I'm working on or stuff that they're working on, just like mutual interest. So definitely grateful for that. I would just love if people went and looked at the Kickstarter. That's all. Just go look at it. See if it'd be something that you or somebody else that you know would be interested in. And the charity donation of the game is only $15. So if you want somebody else to get a Christmas present who's not going to get one, like, my goal is not to make money on that at all. Like, my goal is to get kids presents. And so I'm really excited to bring the game to as many people as I can. And that's only going to happen if, you know, some listeners here, like, go check it out and see if it's for them, you know, and all of that stuff. It's obviously, you know, I'm super passionate about the game. I think people are going to really love it. It's just really fun. And I want to just bring that experience to everybody.
Well, I want to thank you, Mike, MTG Jedi. Speaking of which, hold on. I didn't even ask you this question. What does MTG Jedi stand for before we end this?
Oh, boy. So I think you already know, but since you're not an experienced in this thing,
MTG. Well, Jedi, I assume is Jedi has got something to do with Star Wars.
Yeah,
I don't know MTG.
So MTG is just the shortened version of Magic the Gathering.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
So like
Magic the Gathering Jedi.
Yeah, exactly. So whenever I was creating my screen name, I just took the two things that I love most in the world and I put them together.
That's awesome. Well, you know, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast, taking an hour out of your day to come on. And, you know, literally, I don't think we've ever had anyone come on and talk about this kind of stuff, which is like Magic the Gathering, kind of wizard type worlds, board games. We've never had that on this. And I love learning. And that's kind of what my podcast is turning into, is like learning about something that maybe you never had ever heard about before. Because last week we had a couple come on and talk about their child that has spina bifida. So like two different aspects. Yeah. So we're like two different aspects of this week is about that. And this week's about something totally different. So I really want to thank you for coming on and explaining, and then also telling us about a board game that you created out of thin air for the most part, and working on what, three or four other ones.
Yeah. I'm real excited. The next,
that's awesome.
I think the next one I'm going to do is the party game. but I don't want to spoil it. So you're going to have to follow me if you want to see the next board game.
Well, for those who are listening out there, make sure you go on YouTube, or you can go on Twitch and follow MTG Jedi. Check out his content. And in the show notes for everyone, I will plug the Kickstarter ad for the game Alaria Quest. So if you do want to get a part of it, or just even donate a game to a child, which is fantastic. I love that idea. Go on there. I'll put it in the link below. So if you're listening or watching, just click on the show notes below. It'll take you right there. You can help out MTG Jedi on his game and get that bad boy out there, because it's coming no matter what. It's just a matter of who's going to get it as well. So for those who are listening, please like, share, subscribe, 5-star, get this content out there, because you never know who's coming on next week. And again, Mike, MTG Jedi, I want to thank you for coming on and taking an hour out of your day, man. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you too. Appreciate you too, man.
Cheers.
Cheers.